There's got to be an explanation to all these UFO sightings, right? Hey, it's Stephen Diener, host of the Unidentified Alien Podcast. And whether you're new to the conversation or have been looking into it for years, you need to check out the fastest growing alien show out there, the Unidentified Alien Podcast, or UAP for short. There's a crazy amount of alien encounter stories out there from all over the world. And the beauty of it is that I bring them all to you and let you decide what you believe. Download and subscribe to UAP on any of the major podcasting platforms. And you can also find it on UAPpodcast.com.
The Joyce Kaufman Podcast is being brought to you by Code Red Roofers, South Florida's leading residential and commercial roof experts. Code Red Roofers, roofers that respond. Call 844-4-CODE-RED or visit CodeRedRoofers.com.
Oh, I felt it was just the time for a little rock and roll today. Sorry, guys. We are having technical difficulties here. And we did the best we can. We gave you a little like rock and roll, but I have a guest that's coming up in just a few moments. I did want to say, isn't it interesting how Hamas has now published a video of one of the hostages, and he is missing a hand. And I got these people on campuses who claim that none of this ever happened, you know, that Hamas are the good guys, and that the Israelis were the bad guys in this. And here we have a young kid who was at a music festival. His parents have now had to watch a video of him as a hostage, painfully thin, crying, and missing a hand. I'm just saying, if these creeps on the campuses cannot tell the truth from fantasy, then they need to all be expelled, and basically they should be sent into Rafah. If they want to fight for the Palestinians, let them go to Rafah, because this is outrageous. And I've had just about enough of this behavior that I see on campuses all across the country. You know, how dare they, while hostages are still being held, and not only being held, but being brutalized. You know, unbelievable. 133 people still supposedly hostages. I don't know how many of them are alive. I don't know when this video was made. From what it says, his parents published a statement today saying, "Seeing the video is overwhelming. We are relieved to see him alive, but we are concerned about his health and well-being, as well as that of the other hostages and all of those suffering in the region. We're here today with the plea to all the leaders of the parties who have been negotiating to date, Qatar, Egypt, the United States, Hamas, and Israel. Be brave, lean in, seize this moment, and get a deal done to reunite all of us with our loved ones and end the suffering in this region," said his parents. "Hirsch, if you can hear us, we heard your voice today for the first time in 201 days. And if you can hear us, we are telling you we love you, stay strong, and survive." By the way, the Biden administration received the video on Monday, 2 days before Hamas published it to the public. So the FBI hostage recovery cell is examining the video for any potential evidence and information about where Hirsch Goldberg Pollan is, where he's being held captive. But they can't afford to waste any more time. His cry is the collective cry of all the hostages. And with every passing day, you're losing more lives. And they know it. The families know it. This is a very distressing video. I would not recommend that you watch it. It was disgusting. Anyway, that's my story for today. I'm really trying to be somewhat circumspect about what I say. I know I was very angry yesterday. I'm still that angry, but I'm trying to be circumspect. And I have invited Inez Stepman on the show today. She's a senior policy analyst at the International Women's Forum and the host of her own podcast, High Noon. And we're going to talk. We're going to talk about what's going on these campuses and what's going on with this nonsense that the Biden administration has now put forward that basically makes Title IX a joke. So stay right where you are. I'll be right back with Inez Stepman. Welcome back. I have my guest, as I promised, Inez Felcher Stepman. She's a senior policy analyst at the Independent Women's Forum and actually the host of High Noon, which is a podcast that basically talks about all the things that I talk about. How are you, Inez?
Hi, everybody. This is Adriana Trigiani. I'm the host of You Are What You Read. I have the privilege of interviewing luminaries of our times about the books that shaped them from childhood until now. We get everybody from Sarah Jessica Parker to Kristen Hanna, Mitch Albom, Susie Essman, Craig Ferguson, Rainn Wilson, Amor Towles, you name it, they come, they share. New episodes of You Are What You Read drop every Tuesday on Apple, Spotify, or any major streaming platform wherever you listen to your podcasts.
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
All right. Well, I thought there's probably nobody better I can talk to than somebody who's got a decade of experience in education policy. Once I read the new Title IX proposal by this Biden administration. Now, I happen to have been in the first group that was impacted by Title IX. I would not have been able to go to college had it not been for Title IX. I got a basketball scholarship. So it's very personal for me. And I'm truly disturbed by what I think is the distortion of what it was designed to accomplish.
It's absolutely a distortion. I would call it an inversion of the plain language of the statute. Now, recall, all that Title IX says is that if an educational institution is going to take federal money, which is nearly all schools, we're talking at the university level, but I think a lot of people forget, this runs all the way through public schools into kindergarten, right? So if a school takes any money, an educational institution takes any money from the federal government, which is most schools, that they can't permit discrimination on the basis of sex. That's all it says. Mm-hmm. And now what we've seen is that the Biden administration has inverted that, has made it so that that word sex somehow also includes gender identity and forbids schools from recognizing when someone's a girl and when someone is a boy. And obviously this impacts, you know, girls and women, our rights, our privacy, our opportunities that you mentioned, you know, going to school on a basketball scholarship, right? Mm-hmm. And even our safety, because men and women are different. And schools have had to recognize that in all kinds of contexts, from dorms to locker rooms to sports teams.
Right. And just the idea that you would think it's appropriate to allow males to enter girls' bathrooms, even in elementary and middle school, never mind adult men and women who maybe have a choice. Maybe they don't have to go into that bathroom, but a child has no choices. What are they thinking? How come they're foisting this on our children?
Well, this has been a longstanding goal. I mean, this is something the Obama administration tried to do in the very final months of their tenure. Sure. So this has been a long-time activist leftist goal to basically, because they can't go about this the right way, right, which would be to go to Congress and say, we want to put in, we want to change these civil rights protections to not be on the basis of sex, but on the basis of self-declared gender identity. You are whatever you claim to be, right? Mm-hmm. That is really unpopular. They can't get that passed either, you know, on state level for the most part, and then for sure on the federal level, they can't get that done. And so what they've done instead is unelected bureaucrats have twisted the words of Title IX to try to do this essentially without, by going around the democratic process, going around the people. And this is not even limited. As big as this issue of redefinition of sex is, there are tons of other things in this regulation that's over 1,500 pages long that affects constitutional rights of all Americans. So we're talking about a reversion to the Obama-era standard for due process on college campuses, incredibly unfair to particularly the young college men who are accused of sexual conduct, whether they actually committed that misconduct or not. We're talking about, you know, basic due process rights being stripped, the right to have a representative, the right to have an impartial adjudicator who's going to listen to your case, the right to know exactly what you're being accused of. You know, on Friday, you know, this woman says you did X, Y, and Z to her, right? Instead mm-hmm. of just a vague description saying you did something that was considered misconduct, and you go into that hearing not even knowing what you're accused of. Mm. I will point out that, of course, when Joe Biden was accused of sexual assault, he did not subject himself to this kind of star chamber mm-hmm. trial. So there's all of that. Plus, there are limitations on freedom of speech that are highly relevant, especially, as you say, you know, for young kids. So, you know, part of these regulations say that if a student misgenders, quote unquote, another student, i.e. calls them by the pronouns of their biological sex, that is potentially a discrimination. And that's something the school is going to have to punish. right? Similarly, if somebody says something, let's say a professor is lecturing about a subject that includes sharing some opinions about men and women, right, in the workforce or relationships between men and women, whatever it is, these regulations expand the definition of harassment so that it's no longer the things we would obviously think about, you know, somebody, a student following around another student, you know, whispering sexual commentary or something in her ear, right? Mm-hmm. That's not what we're talking about. We're now talking about something as vague as saying something that might be subjectively offensive to somebody else, and that being a violation of federal law and potentially a reason for a school to lose funding. So there's real encouragement in these regulations for schools to curtail constitutional due process rights for students, constitutionally protected speech for students, even though the Supreme Court is continually smacking them down for doing those things because they're clearly contrary to the Constitution.
Right. You know, and I think to myself, you know, in the last couple of weeks, what we have seen is this incredible display of, now, as I mentioned, basketball is very important to me. And we've seen this incredible display of college female basketball players, which captured the attention of the entire country. Well, guess what? That's going to be diminished by this, you know, Title IX. If they are forced to play with men who identify as females, and if females are now going to be playing with men who identify, what's the point? There is no protection for those genders at the collegiate level. Now, I know our Attorney General, Ashley Moody, has already said, we're going to challenge this. What do you think is going to happen next? I mean, there's going to be lots of lawsuits.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, this is so clearly beyond the power of, you know, executive agencies, of unelected bureaucrats. I'm really glad to hear that the Attorney General in Florida is challenging this. There are other challenges as well. I mean, Louisiana is going to be challenging. There's no reason to comply with these regulations before we've had our say in court. And in Independent Women's Law Center, which is an IW organization, we're challenging this in court. And there are lots of reasons to do so. One, this is just not what the statute says, right? As we pointed out, as you pointed out in the beginning, right? This is a total twisting and inversion of the plain language of the statute. And now that we have a court that is looking more skeptically at agency power and not deferring out of, you know, misplaced respect to unelected bureaucrats and how they define their own power, I think we are well placed to challenge it just on the grounds that they don't have the power to do this. And then there are other administrative grounds we can challenge this on as well. So I'm hoping those challenges are going to be successful. It's also, you know, something that people should consider when they're thinking about who they're going to vote for, right?
Yep.
We're always hearing, I think Joe Biden does do kind of a song and dance in public often about, you know, being moderate culturally, as though, you know, Republicans are extreme on some of these cultural issues. And the reality is that his administration has been the most radical in American history in terms of some of these very, very, you know, activist left-wing concepts. And that's exactly what these Title IX regulations are. What could be more extreme than rewriting American civil rights law for the entire country, forcing people not to recognize that boys are boys and girls are girls, right? That is an incredibly extreme overreach, and it's something that people should consider when they're thinking about, you know, who is going to be the next president.
Yeah, look, I said yesterday, Title IX, and believe me, I was watching and following it because I was a high school senior when it was being promoted, and it was one sentence. This is a 1,577-page regulation. How do you, you know, we need to stop allowing, and no offense, I know you you have a JD, but and my son is a lawyer, but we have to stop letting lawyers make things so complicated that no one can understand them or even battle them without a court case.
It's even worse, right? It's unelected bureaucrats who are defining these statutes and making them into something that they were never intended to be. There's no legislative history, nothing in the plain reading of this statute that would remotely suggest that it was referring to gender identity. It's completely made up by unelected bureaucrats. If you want to change the law, the proper way to do that is to actually go and change the law. Mm-hmm. Not to do it behind the backs of the American people in this illegitimate power grab, right? Mm-hmm. So I think these challenges in courts have a really good case to make. I think that's a case the courts hopefully will listen to. But it just goes to show that the Biden administration doesn't care what the limits of legality are, right? They just push as far as they can on these radical social agenda, and they will twist anything they have in front of them. They've been doing it on student loans as well, right? They will twist any statute that they have in front of them to just get the policy that they want that they can't get Congress to pass. Right. That's not how our system is supposed to work. It's not a unilateral, you know, president doesn't unilaterally make law. But that's what's happening with the power of these agencies. And I hope that courts are going to rein in that power, because it's a longstanding problem, I think, in our politics, that so much of what we ought to be deciding on as citizens, as voters, is being decided either by the courts or by unelected bureaucrats and agencies. There's so little we vote. But what we are actually voting on seems to be like this shrinking pie of issues that we're actually allowed to have a say on. So hopefully, you know, in this case, the courts will say, no, this is an overreach. This is something that if you want to do this kind of radical transformation of American law, you have to do it the right way. And you have to go to Congress and actually get them to pass something, because doing it in this backdoor way is totally illegitimate.
Right. And meanwhile, you know, I've got a Department of Education that can't seem to get a handle on what violence on campuses looks like. You know, I've said to my audience 100 times, when I look at these protests, as they are referred to, taking place on college campuses, this is a direct result of the kind of, you know, policies that we're talking about today, that we have empowered the crazies in this country. And certainly at the college level, academia is responsible for what I'm seeing happening. I mean, imagine a group on a campus today, a group that supports the KKK, shouting death to black people. How long do you think those protests would last?
Yeah, I mean, there's obviously a double standard, and there have been instances where this crosses over into something that we have had, you know, cases filed that this actually does amount to racial intimidation on our campuses. If you're pointing to your fellow students who are Jewish and saying, you know, next Al-Qassam strike here, which is one of the examples that was going on in Columbia just in the last few days, you know, that's a threat. That's a racial threat, and it should be dealt with as such. That's no longer protected speech. But really, this should not be surprising to anyone. No. The ideology that's evidenced on our campuses has been there for a long time. It's not something that cropped up a few years ago. The only difference is that its adherents are gaining more and more power outside of the university as they graduate into positions of power, right? In government, in large corporations. This really shouldn't be a surprise. And here I get very frustrated, honestly, with the complacency of the right for decades in terms of turning over the education system to the left with very little challenge. Virtually every university in this country, there's a handful of exceptions like Hillsdale College, but virtually every university in this country is completely dependent on federal money. These are federal loans, student loans that now are, you know, there's agitation to have them forgiven. These are federal dollars in grants and loans that are propping up the business model of these universities. They have special tax breaks. They have all kinds of special favors and grants directly from the taxpayer. And it's long past time that we put some riders on that money. Every time that they, you know, allow this kind of psychotic behavior, I want people to remember, like, we are paying for this. And
that's
we have
right.
the choice to stop paying for it, or to demand that if we're going to continue paying for it, that this kind of behavior stops on campuses. We have a perfect right to implement those kinds of policies. And I feel like for too long, the right has hobbled itself in the way that it thinks about these things, like, oh no, we can't interfere. Like these are half government agency products, right? These universities are not the free market. They're not small businesses. Their entire business model is paid for by taxpayers. And we have every right as taxpayers to say, I don't like what you're doing with my money.
Yeah. And what's even worse is there are parents like me who have been conservative and send their kids to these schools hoping for a successful adult life. I have daughter who went to Columbia. I have a son, Harvard, Yale, all of these schools that I'm watching this. And by the way, with the last name Kaufman, so I don't have to tell you how my stomach is turning today. Not only did they get my tax dollars, but they got the dollars out of what would have been my 401k for years to the tens of thousands. And now I'm looking at this and it's sickening. But you're right. We on the right have tolerated this nonsense for far too long.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's time to treat the universities as they what they have been very clearly in my mind for decades, which is training camps for far left activists. Mm-hmm. And, you know, those kids who are protesting on Columbia campus today, they're the next Chesa Boudins, right? Mm-hmm. They're going to be the next, you know, staffers for the Democratic administration. Mm-hmm. They're going to bring those views with them. That's what's been happening for decades now. And there has been this very naive kind of outlook, I think, on the right that, oh, like these sort of crazy protesters on college campuses with their crazy views, they're going to impact with the real world and they're going to have to start paying taxes and they're going to realize how crazy they've been. Mm-hmm. That's not what's happened. What's happened is those graduates with those same views have ended up, you know, being VPs in major Fortune 500 companies, right?
District attorneys.
In the highest, yeah, the highest levels of government. And mm-hmm. they're bringing those views with them. They're transforming the world. World isn't transforming them. So I think it's long past time that the right stops funding what are essentially leftist activist madrasas in the country.
Yeah. Well, listen, I agree. Thank you so much, Inez Stettman at the Independent Women's Forum. Thank you for coming on such short notice. But I was just yesterday I ranted and raved for the whole show and I said I need to bring an expert on. So thank you for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
Appreciate it. All right. We got to take a quick break. Stay right where you are. I'll be right back. So, of course, you know, guys, that I've been super upset about what I'm seeing all across the country. Super upset. And then to watch this video of a hostage who's, you know, missing his hand now. And who knows where the rest of the hostages are. Who knows if that video was shot 6 weeks ago or 3 months ago. You know, and the suffering that those families are going through. And then they have to look at college campuses in America where people are denying that it even happened. That's the part that's just throwing me over the edge. I'm going this evening. My husband and I are going to the movies. And I didn't want to go to this movie. I really didn't. I thought maybe, you know, I can avoid this. But he came in from this morning. He came in after his meetings. And he said to me, let's go see Civil War. And I said, do you have any idea what that's about? This is not a movie about the Civil War, okay? We had that movie already. I said, this is a movie about the military going against the people in this country. And, okay, maybe that's a conspiracy theory in the minds of Democrats, but not so much in the minds of conservatives and Republicans anymore. You know, I'm upset enough without going to a movie that plays out my worst nightmare. But I also need to know what are people watching and what are people thinking? Because the success or failure of this movie is going to tell me a lot about what people are thinking. Just like the election is. Inez was absolutely correct. If you don't think what you're seeing at college campuses should influence how you vote in November, then please, you know, find something else to do at 3 o'clock. Because it is a total waste of my time and energy to speak to people who do not understand what is going on in our country and what it means. You know, I have children and grandchildren. Now, granted, my children are grown. And even my grandchildren are not babies anymore, most of them. But what kind of world is this that I'm leaving them? Never mind, what kind of country is this that I'm leaving them? Because it looks nothing like the country I grew up in, nothing like it. It doesn't even look like the country that my children grew up in. And as she pointed out, Inez Stettman pointed out, this has been going on for decades now. But it was that drip, 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 and we ignored it. It was that, well, You know, we don't want to be called names. We don't want to be called a racist, and we don't want to be called anti-anything. So we're just going to stay quiet because we're not really sure if we believe what we say. That's frightening to me. You know, here we go again. We got a president, former president of the United States, who the media just can't wait that he gets punished for speaking out loud. We're going to find out today, or no later than I think today, maybe tonight or maybe tomorrow, that there's a potential punishment for Donald Trump for violating a gag order. Now, they talk about thousands of dollars in fines, but they know that doesn't mean anything to Donald Trump. But jail time? What? Juan Merchan, this Manhattan Supreme Court justice, is seriously considering convicting the former president for violating a gag order that never should have been put on him in the first place? Because if you're the only gag orders I've ever heard of in my life were put on the prosecution. Like, Michael Cohen shouldn't be out there talking about this case. And if you're going to let him, then how can you stop the defendant from protecting himself? But there's no gag order on anybody except Donald Trump. And that, my friends, is frightening. You know, the nonsense that's going on with the former National Enquirer publisher yesterday, David Pecker, who said, well, I once had a doorman in the Trump Tower trying to sell me a story claiming that Donald Trump had an illegitimate child with some maid at Trump Tower. And, you know, this is Michael Cohen's testimony is going to involve telling these kind of National Enquirer stories? Come on, man. That would have sold a lot of copies, I'm sure. Probably the most copies since Elvis Presley's death, or maybe since, you know, Monica Lewinsky's escapades. And it doesn't matter to the media whether it's true or 1,000% untrue. They just use this stuff because they want to destroy him. In this case, you know, the assistant district attorney, this Joshua Steinglass, said, was the story true? And he said, no, we determined that it was absolutely untrue. But they bought it in case some other publication would buy it. In other words, they didn't want the National Star to get it, so they bought it. Even though they knew it was not true. Because that's what they do. That's what the National Enquirer does. And all I can tell you is, these people are responsible for what could unfold in this country in the next 6 to 8 months. And it is not pretty. It really isn't. And I don't know, but I'm here to say today that Judge Merchan hopefully knows that he must be extremely circumspect and careful about what he does. This is a candidate. This is a former president and the leading candidate. He is now leading in swing states, lots of them. And if you, as a judge, try to incarcerate him, I don't think that's going to play out well in the public. I really don't. You know, I don't think it's going to cause a civil war, but I think there'll be a tremendous amount of disillusionment. Can't trust the judicial system. To be fair, the Department of Justice has been weaponized. We're supposed to accept that? Nah, we're not going to. Don't forget to download the app, the 850 WFTL app, or visit the 850 WFTL website. That way you can get all the cool stories and participate in contests. Coming up after me, Eric Erickson. Jen and Bill will be back at 6 a.m. I have one segment left, so stay right where you are. I'll be right back. Let me tell you why I say that the Fort Lauderdale Sun Sentinel newspaper is not even good enough to line a birdcage with or allow your dog to go wee-wee on. I'm looking at today's, and the only reason I have it is because they had it at the Broward Jail where I was this morning. And so I picked one up. I said, is it okay if I take this? They said, yes. I pick up this paper. There is not a single story in any part of this paper about the protests that are happening on college campuses. There is there's a story about migrants flown to Martha Vineyard getting visas. There is the headline stories are $850 million in the pipeline for the Everglades. School leader transition leading to criticism because the Broward superintendent just like up and said, I'm leaving in the middle of a school board meeting. There's another front page headline. Prosecutors target Trump's race in 2016. Pompano Beach seeks solution to gun violence. U.S. Supreme Court justices weigh outdoor sleeping ban. 9 Tijuana Flats locations are shuttered. Now, let me ask you a question. Are those the biggest stories? Really? What kind of a newspaper is this? This is outrageous. Bricks of cocaine found in lamp offer clue into deadly carjacking of South Florida woman. Florida Highway Patrol pursuit policy differs. I can't even find anything in here that I'm interested in. Oh, wait, I missed it. In the Nation World page, section one, but at the very end, page 11, pro-Palestinian protests sweep college campuses. Let me just say this as clearly as I can. These are not Palestinian protests. These are anti-Jewish, anti-Israel protests. If you can't tell the public the truth, then why would anyone buy your rag? It's been years since I would read this newspaper, and now I remember why. This is an outrage. To wait till page 11 to talk about that? And then, of course, the idea that I have to wade through some of the most ridiculous stories that make no sense to me at all, really. Not important. The voters don't need to know that. At least give us something we can work with, you know? But that's not what this particular newspaper does. It's just, it's embarrassing. You know, I live in a place that has a major newspaper, and yet that newspaper doesn't cover these anti-Semitic protests happening on college campuses all over the country. Not important. You know, like I said yesterday, I don't know how many Jews have to die before it becomes a big story. In the past, it was 6 million. So, you know, I'm really hoping that it's not still 6 million because there's only 6 million of them left. Think about that for a moment. I know I do. Anyway, you can imagine, pro-Palestinian is not the right headline. It's anti-Semitism on the march in America. That's the headline today. And what are we going to do about it? How should college presidents handle it? How should the parents and grandparents of students who are attending these colleges, how should they handle it? Withdraw your kids from these schools. I wish that I had done that. But it's not too late for you. And if I were you, I would save myself tens of thousands of dollars for an inferior education and an indoctrination that turns young people into blooming idiots. Because that's all I see on these college campuses. These are morons. These are morons at Poison Ivy League schools. It's unbelievable, really. Anyway, I thank you for your time this time. Until next time, I got a plan. And that plan is to be back here at 3 o'clock tomorrow. I'll be talking with Mike Gonzalez from the Heritage Foundation. He and Sebastian Gorka's wife have written a new book, and it is fascinating. It is called Next Generation Marxism, what it is and how to combat it. What a perfect timing that is. So I thank you for your time this time. Until next time, I'll be back tomorrow at 3, if it be his will and he delays his coming. What lies behind us and what lies ahead of us are tiny matters compared to what lies within us. So wherever you are, just be yourself. Everybody else is taken. May God bless you. May God bless Israel. And may God bless the United States of America. We need a blessing right now.
The Joyce Kaufman Podcast has been brought to you by Code Red Roofers, South Florida's leading residential and commercial roof experts. Code Red Roofers, roofers that respond. Call 844-4-CODE-RED or visit CodeRedRoofers.com.